Welcome to the Steve's Dying Guitar Podcast, brought to you by GuitarZoom.com. If you want to improve your guitar playing, keep listening. If you want to improve even faster, go to GuitarZoom.com, where you'll find all of Steve's premium courses, masterclasses, and memberships that'll help you quickly and easily improve your playing. Now, here's your host, Steve Stein. So let's get going here, Professor Stein. The very first concept that we're going to be talking about is the slice. Or excuse me. Is that correct? No, the jump.
The jump, yeah. Do you want me to do that solo first and kind of show them how this whole sets
show
up?
Show us this concept so we can get it in our ears and they're going to break it all down.
Right. That's a great idea. Might have seen this little pattern that I put together. And the point of the pattern was to show you how a lot of players like me try and visualize the fretboard. Now, don't be intimidated by the speed of it and don't be intimidated by all the positions I'm playing it in. The most important thing is just to walk away from this being able to play something that's different than what you normally play and have some fun. So let me just show you the thing. If you haven't seen it before, I'm going to play it for you here. Do it again here. When we do solos, okay, when we write things, whether we're trying to improvise something, using pentatonic, using diatonic, whatever it is you like, okay, you have two choices whenever you play. Either you're trying to make something up in real time, which is kind of what we call improvisation, or you're trying to write something that you can replicate or practice something that you can replicate at some point in time. And people forget about that. Like, we always think like everything has to be made up in real time. Like, you got to do it. And the truth is, I always try and tell people that improvisation is kind of a lie, because improvisation, it's not like you're giving a guitar to someone that's never played guitar before and having them play things, right? You're regurgitating things that you've done before. You just don't know in what order and what capacity they're going to come out. That's kind of what improvisation is. So with this lick that I'm showing you right here, or this pattern I'm showing you, I practiced it. I worked it up. You know, I made it up, and that's what I want to try and show you is, like Dan had mentioned, these three key things, like different things that I use when I solo across the fretboard. So I'm not just going as I play, okay? So, Dan, where do you want to go from here with that?
Okay, so what I would like you to do is, first of all, maybe you could just play that lick without the jam track, and maybe you could slow it down for us so we can kind of just see what you're doing.
Sure.
Just to get our heads wrapped around that concept right there, so we can kind of slowly see your fingers move across the fretboard. You don't have to break down every note, but just and then what I'd like to do is just go into the first technique, which is that jump idea.
You got it. Yeah. So the first thing I do is I hear a track, I write a track, or I hear a track, or whatever it might be. And then I start trying to figure out how I want to approach the guitar, okay? So what I like to do, and we're going to get to these three things right away, but the first thing I do is I start trying to develop some ideas. And then, as Dan said, I slow it down, just like you would. So I slow the track down, whether I have, you know, I have software where I can slow it down and things like that. And then I'll practice it. So I might take this track, let me slow it down for you, and just kind of show you.
Maybe use your close-up. Yeah, cool.
So what I do is, and again, I'm going to show you the technique behind it, or the art behind it, I should say. But I try and think about, instead of going and just playing like pentatonic or playing something that's just sequential, what I try and do is the first technique that we're going to talk about here, which is what we came up with the name jump, which is really, in my mind, what I'm doing is I'm trying to figure out how to overlap ideas. So instead of just playing sequentially up and down whatever scale it is I'm choosing, again, whether it's pentatonic or diatonic, it doesn't matter, I'm trying to figure out how to do something that breaks up the monotony of the notes being in order. So what I'm doing here is I'm just taking an E minor scale, but instead of playing all those notes, I'm taking those notes and I'm playing these. Now, you'll notice how I've got this big jump from 12 to 16, which is this 12 right here. And then here I'm doing 13 and 17. Now, I do these kind of things a lot on my guitar, and you're going to see this coming up in a little while here, too, when we get to what I refer to as the squeeze. But... So I've got this outer lying thing that looks like this. Well, that's kind of cool. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just, and if you've got your guitar handy, this is great because you can practice this with me. So you're just going to be doing this. You're going to go from the 17 of the second string here, and you're going to do a pull off to the 13. Okay, then the next string what I'm going to do is play 16 and 14 as a pull off. So I literally have... And then what I do is I return back to the 15 that I skipped the first time. That's kind of the overlap. You see that? And then the overlap on the second string. I already played 16 and 14, so I'm going to go to 12. So I have... And you'll notice as I do that, it just sounds a little bit more interesting. It sounds a little more colorful, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
the jump idea is like you're jumping over the different notes.
You're skipping them over. That's right. So instead of just playing everything in sequence, which again, there's nothing wrong with. We want to do that sometimes. The problem is because we practice scales all the time and all these things, which we need to do, we just get into this mindset where everything moves up and down all the time. So we're just always playing the same things. Mm-hmm. The point of this is to try and learn how to break out of that by trying, and again, for you, if you're learning how to do this or you've got your guitar and you're trying to learn how to play this, you don't have to worry about the whole thing. Like, you don't have to look at the whole pattern that I just did and go, oh my gosh, that thing's going to be impossible. You might just take one little thing like I'm showing you right now and just learn how to do this one little thing. And even if you didn't understand the theory behind it, the scale and everything, like when I was younger and I was learning how to do this stuff and I knew nothing about theory, I would learn licks just knowing that this was in E, right? So if my song was in E, I would play the lick, regardless of whether I knew what the scale was and the mode and blah, blah, blah. I just learned things because I thought they sounded cool and then I would use them. It wasn't until later mm-hmm. that I started learning why things worked and how things worked. Mm-hmm. I'm an advocate for everybody, including Dan and myself. Our job is to make music first and then worry mm-hmm. about the whys and the hows and things after we're actually making this music. Because it's inspiring.
That's such a huge point.
Yeah.
That's such a huge point. In fact, let me give you a quick analogy with baseball. Like I remember with baseball, you know, you take your kid out there and they're 8 years old or whatever, and you're signing up for baseball. They're not going. The first thing the coach doesn't walk out on the field and do is say, "Okay, guys, come on in. Let's talk about the infield fly rule. Let's talk about what happens when, you know," and start explaining the rules of the game. Like if you hit the ball on the left side of the bag, then it's going to be a fair ball. And on the right side is a foul ball. And then like your 8-year-old kid's like, what? I thought we were going to play baseball.
Yeah, right.
Like the first thing they do is they have them come out there and just start throwing the ball to each other, right? Or they start just tossing the ball and let them try to hit it. It's exactly the same thing in music, guys. What you want to do is you want to play. You don't want to get paralyzed by the theory and the technique and all this. Just play, start having fun. The next step on down the line is to actually, if you're interested and you actually want to go deep into this stuff, to start learning the why, which is all the theoretical stuff, which is, again, we have those courses if you want to dive into that. That's not what the Creative Fretboard is about. This is about playing.
That's right. Yeah. And that to me has always been the most important thing is I've dealt with many students in my life, and it definitely pertains to adults. Kids have an easier time enjoying the creativity of something. Adults tend to always want to try and figure out the whys first. And psychologically, it's almost like we're purposely putting up roadblocks so we don't get to the answer because we're scared of actually getting there and making the music and getting right. together with people and having fun. You know, we gotta perfect everything first. And I think you gotta figure out how to enjoy this. So even in you, like, again, you've got the pattern in your handout, of what I wrote here and that sort of thing. And you're going to notice that there's certain places where I put hammer-ons or certain places I put pull-offs or certain places I put slides. That is a suggestion of how I did it. That does not mean that you have to do them exactly the way I did them in order for this to function. You got to figure out what works best for you. So you might notice as I'm doing this, I'm playing a pull-off from 17 to 13 and then a pull-off from 16 to 14. you might decide, I'd rather pick those. And if you do, great. That's never been an issue for me, because I actually had a discussion with a guy just a short while ago where, you know, he's a big Alex Lifeson fan from Rush. And so he was trying to replicate everything Alex was doing until he saw a video on YouTube where Alex was talking about one of his solos for Working Man, if you've ever heard that by Rush. And he's like, I don't even know how the solo goes. So the guy who's interviewing him is asking him all this stuff about music, and Alex is going, don't try and play my solo, just play, because I don't even know what I did. So you got to learn that's the point of learning to be creative on your fretboard, is these are options. You don't have to replicate everything exactly. You're just looking to break out of the rut that you might be in when you look at your guitar.
Great point. So is that jump technique all throughout this pattern, or just that first part?
Well, to be honest with you, the three things we're going to talk about, when I play, I'm not conscious of each one independently. They tend to kind of merge in and out. So when I play, you're going to see this jumping, this overlapping idea a lot in different places. Mm-hmm. So this first lick that I created, though, was with the intention of showing you what an overlap actually looks like, right?
Okay, perfect.
But it'll be all over the place. So if I keep going now, you're going to start noticing we're going to move into the next one, which is what we refer to as did we call it the cut or the slice?
Slice.
The slice, okay.
Because it's slicing across.
Right, exactly. So the slice is really like doing an arpeggio. If you know what an arpeggio is, arpeggio means broken chord. So if you play, that's what an arpeggio is. Now, again, don't get caught up in all the formalities. So if I do this, here's the next part of my little lick here. So I do that little slide from 12 to 11. Now watch this. So right there, I'm going to the 11 on the third string, the 12 on the fourth string, and the 14 on the fifth string, which is creating what in theory we commonly refer to as arpeggios. But here's the big difference. I don't want you to necessarily be thinking about, well, I'm playing an E minor chord, therefore the arpeggio I should create should be an E minor, blah, blah, blah. That's important. But there are a million ways to slice across the strings. At any point in time, if you think about it, now again, you got to know a little bit about scales, right, in order to be able to do this. But the point is if I can see a scale, for instance, I can slice anywhere I want over any of these strings. You see, I could go all over the place and just make these things. So the point of this is, unlike traditional arpeggio study, it's a concept. It's a creative concept where you're not just going to the logic. The logic says it's an E minor chord, therefore you play an E minor arpeggio, or it's an A minor chord, therefore you play an A minor arpeggio. That's all wonderful, okay? But again, if you think about it, it goes back to what I just said before, where we tend to lock ourselves in this thing where mm-hmm. when a chord is being played, we do this same route all the time. What I'd rather have you do is think about being creative by learning how to slice through these strings at different places. Now, I'm going to do it a couple more times, but you can see it right here when I do this. Right there. Okay?
Super cool. So when you're thinking about the slice concept, it seems like on the examples you gave, they were all ascending in pitch, but that one was descending. So you can go either way.
I mean, you can go, you know, like, again, if you think about it as a visual tool, right? I might do something like this, but I could also do this. Mm-hmm. So there, I kind of incorporated both a slice and then that in and out idea, right? The jump idea up on the top. Because when I'm sitting in one place, I can't slice. Well, I can a little bit, right? But I've got limited mobility. So when I'm sitting in one position, that's a nice time to start trying to do a jump. And then right there, you see, I went into a slice. So I'm just doing, again, I'm just playing. I'm not consciously doing anything. I'm just jumping over stuff. And now I'm going to slice. And then I might slice again. Okay. And that is very much how I see my fretboard. So I've got this logistical thing going on, which is what scale I'm using or where my notes are or whatever that might be. But above and beyond that, I've got this creative thing happening where I'm trying to make it interesting for both the listener and for myself as a player when I play, because I get sick of playing the same thing over and over and over. And I'm sure you know what that's like. It's like every time you grab the guitar, you practice all these things. Then you grab your guitar and you're with somebody else and you start playing and you're a little nervous and boom, everything you've been practicing for the last 2 months goes out the window. You forget all of it. So that's the trick here.
Let me ask you another question about the slice idea. Are you thinking that the notes are going to be on adjacent strings? In other words, is it always like string 5-4-3
yeah,
or 3-4-5?
Yeah, for me it is. I mean, I can jump over, but if I jump over a string, then I think of it as more jumping.
Okay.
Right?
That's what I'm trying to figure out in my head. Like, what's the difference really between jumping and the slice idea? The slice is more like adjacent notes on adjacent strings.
Yeah. So maybe you could show us the difference. It's literally like slicing. You're cutting across. So I'm cutting this direction or I'm cutting this direction. That's what I'm doing. Right? That's how this thing works. So I'm visualizing, and it always helps for me to have a couple of positions, whether it's pentatonic or diatonic. It's always nice to have a couple of different positions so you can kind of see how the slice is going to work.
Okay, so that's a really important part, guys, that he just said. If you know one position of your scale, this is going to be difficult to implement. You're going to actually need two.
Yeah, like let's take, like a lot of people know pentatonic. Let's take pentatonic as an example.
Okay.
If you're enjoying this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, go to guitarzoom.com and consider becoming a premium member. There are three memberships to choose from. VIP, which gives you instant access to a library of short but powerful courses as well as new bite-sized lessons each month. There's also Play Songs that gives you step-by-step lessons so you can learn to play your favorite songs fast. And finally, there's Masterclass, university-level training on everything from soloing to music theory, from blues to home recording. For more info about these memberships and all the premium courses available to you, go to guitarzoom.com. Now back to the podcast.
So if I was playing the first position of pentatonic, which pretty much everybody knows, now I can jump all I want. Right? But I can't really slice. I can do a little bit, like if I went 15, 14, 12, right? I could do that. Sorry about that. But when I get to these strings here, I can't really do that, right? Because these guys, like if you think about it, this 12, 14, 12, 14, 12, 14, you know, you can make a chord or something. But if I add, for instance, if you know the fifth position, which is what I really like to add, is this one. So what I do is I try and see, even if it's just two positions, you don't have to see the whole fretboard. If I just took those two positions, though, now that second position opens up. Some really cool sounding things that I can do. Which starts sounding more like, you know, Eric Johnson or Richie Kotzen or different things like that. And that's what they do. That's the point is they, you know, all these people, they play a lot. So they get tired of playing just the same things over and over and over. And even if you don't get tired of them, those are already part of your bag of tricks, right? So if you've already been practicing certain licks here, it's not that I'm telling you want to get rid of that stuff. You don't. You keep them. But if you can implement some new ideas into what you're already doing, it just makes the whole thing sound more creative. And for me as a guitar player, it's just more inspiring. It makes me want to play more because I get sick of playing the same six things over and over and over.
Absolutely.
So
we've covered the jump and we've covered the slice. We're going to cover the last part of this, which is going to be what? I already forgot it.
The squeeze.
The jump, slice, and the
squeeze. Yes.
But I don't want to go into the squeeze just yet because it's a little more... I don't know if it's more difficult than the other two, but it's just something that I want to clarify something for everybody here. You just heard us say that in order to do these techniques, this jump, slice, and squeeze, you're really going to have to learn at least two positions of your scales. Okay, guys. So look, let's just be honest. If you're a serious guitar player, you got to learn your scales, period.
Well, and even if you learn one scale, but you know more than one position, you know, you can't stay here forever, right?
Exactly. So really to implement all of these concepts that we're teaching here, Steve's teaching, is you need to know at least two positions of diatonic or pentatonic, either one. And the more positions you learn, the more creative you can be. That's okay. Right. So we started out this conversation by saying you have to know all the theory. And you know what? You don't have to know theory to learn scale patterns.
That's right.
You just learn the patterns.
Okay.
You don't have to know why.
That's right, Dan. And this brings me to another big point too, because by nature, humans, and most of the time guitar players, because we all seem like we have some level of OCD, it's always all or nothing. So either you know one pattern or you got to know every pattern and you got to know it everywhere. There is a middle ground. You can get incredibly creative with just two patterns, two shapes on your fretboard. And when you get really good at those, learn a third one. But you don't, again, you don't have to go, well, I got to know all the patterns by, well, it's Thursday, so I suppose I better know them all by Friday at noon. You know, you can give yourself a break and just explore a couple of things. And as you get better, then expand.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, guys, the way you the way you approach anything in life is you just do one step at a time. So if there's five pentatonic patterns, if you learn one pattern per week, you would have all five in 5 weeks.
That's right.
So just learn the first one, which you probably already know. Learn the second one or learn the first and fifth, whichever way you want to learn. It doesn't really matter. But just learn like one pattern per week and then just incorporate it. Don't just learn the pattern, but like learn it and then start adding in some of these concepts that Steve's talking about here with the jumping over the strings, creating the slice. And we're going to talk about the squeeze here in just a second. And let's go on with the rest of this, Steve, which is the squeeze.
The squeeze.
This is a pretty cool idea. And the whole concept behind squeeze, just so you guys know, is it's like one of those koosh balls or whatever. You know, you squeeze it. It contracts and then it expands. It contracts and expands. That's the whole idea behind squeeze. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. This is, again, this is a big one that I use in my playing because I'm always trying to find a different way of playing. So don't worry about where I'm playing. I just want to show you this. So if I was in E minor again, which I am, so instead of playing a scale that might look like this, where I'm going, like playing a full scale like that, I would think of it as playing two notes that are close together, and then playing two notes that are far apart, and two notes that are close together, and two notes that are far apart. So in order to do this, I really have to have three notes on strings to be able to make these choices. And that's why, like, if you know a pentatonic, you kind of need two positions to be able to do this sort of thing. So for instance, what I could do is take two notes that are close together, then two notes that are far apart, then two notes that are close together, then two notes that are far apart, and then two notes that are close together. And it sounds a little more unique. Now, I don't have to just do close, far apart, close. I can do any order I want at any given moment in time, right? So I can do a couple that are close together, and I'm not that conscious about it when I'm playing. I'm just trying to see it differently. So if we took your E minor pentatonic again, just a standard E minor pentatonic. But again, to do this, I got to have another position, so I'm going to move down to that fifth position. I'm just doing the same things each time. So I might do two notes that are close together, and then two notes that are far apart. Then two notes that are close together, and two notes that are far apart. So I can get these different kinds of sounds as I play. And when I combine that idea with this expansion and contraction idea with slicing or with, you know, overlapping ideas with jumping, right? So as I play, I just think about the position that I'm in, and then I start trying to figure out where normally, like, maybe I have a position. Let's just go through this one, okay? So let's say I'm in my E minor. And that's a typical scale that we would... So instead of just playing it like that, I start thinking about how I could jump. Slice. And then I'll do large and small. See how cool that sounds? Now, let me show you over an actual track so you can kind of hear what it sounds like. Of sequential playing, right? So I could just play up and down. I'm going to throw that in there. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to use that. It's just that most players, that's all they use. When they first start learning how to do this stuff, they just play up and down. We want to be able to play a scale up and down. There's no doubt about it. But if we do it every time, it just gets old. So we're always looking
for something. It's very
cool. Yeah.
It's very cool. And in fact, it dawned on me, man, that like, it's almost like paint by numbers. Remember those little things you get when you're a kid, you know, and it's like paint all the ones yellow, paint all the twos green or whatever, you know. It's like you take these different concepts, guys. You take like, you got to know a scale. You got to know a scale pattern. Okay, just a pattern. Don't worry about why does G have one sharp flat. You know, forget about all that. Just learn the pattern. Okay. That's like one part of it. Another part is this jump idea where you're jumping over certain notes, leaving some things out, not just playing it in sequence. And then the slice idea of take three strings and connect them together across the pattern, either up or down or left or right. And then the idea of the squeeze, which is smaller intervals, larger intervals combined.
Intervals, right? Being distances.
Yeah. Yeah, just between two notes, right? And don't worry about, trust me, don't worry about what intervals are. I was like in college before I figured that out. Not important. You're just taking the pattern, you're shortening it up or lengthening it, expanding it or contracting it. That's the whole idea of the squeeze.
And if you do know some theory or anything like that, or you know the notes in your fretboard, stuff like that, that's just the next level. That now gives all of these things that you're doing direction. So now as you're doing them, you can target certain things within these movements that you're doing. You see, right. People forget that theory, they think they're going to learn theory and that's going to make them a better musician. Theory makes you understand things better, but it doesn't make you play better. It just makes you understand things better. You know,
I always say it's the language of music. If you want to play with serious musicians, you got to learn how to talk the talk.
That's
it just
right.
allows you to communicate.
That's right. But I mean, if you look at someone like Angus Young from AC/DC, it's not like he's going to sit down and tell you a bunch of theory. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's any less of a guitar player than somebody else. It just depends on the situation you're in. But I guarantee you that he understands where things are on the guitar by practicing, by trying things out. He learns what works and what doesn't work. He may not have the language. So we're all different that way when it comes to playing. And that's why, again, it brings us back to that same place where you got to make the music first, then start adding in whatever logical place you want to be, which gives your guitar playing more direction, for sure.
Very cool. So to wrap it up here, Steve, I would like to put you on the spot and see if you can and show us. Maybe you could turn your pedal tone on there again and just and it's just a single note, guys. That's all it is a low note. It's just that E that's just ringing out there.
Yep. Right. Yep.
And then he's going to play over it. And what I'm going to ask you to do, Steve, is to incorporate all these concepts, you know, and just kind of let yourself go in terms of the way you approach it. Once you kind of get this stuff into your bones, you know, you already know what the squeeze, slice, and all this stuff is. And also throw a couple of licks in there for us.
Oh, sure, of course.
So they can kind of see, like,
you got it.
How would I put all this together?
You got it. Sure. All right, here we go.
Thank you. very cool, dude.
Yeah. Now, again, I'm trying different things because you're asking me to do it. You know, I would most certainly try and incorporate some melody in there or, you know, different kinds of things. There's lots of different things, but you'll notice I used a lot of repetition. I use some sequential stuff, right? When I play fast, that's when I tend to use my scales. And then the rest of it is I'm trying to figure out how to move around and make things that are interesting. And then if I get somewhere that I like, that's when I'll start trying to repeat. You know, something that I like too. And I'm going back and forth between some bluesy stuff and then some regular minor stuff and just explore different things.
And that's the way it all comes together.
That's right.
So look, guys, I hope that you've gotten a lot out of this kind of relatively short webinar that we've done today. Just keep in mind that we're only focusing, like becoming a holistic, complete guitar player is a journey. It doesn't happen in a week. It doesn't happen in a month. It doesn't season play and teaching for 27 years. I don't know how many years before that you were playing. You're still learning.
That's right.
I'm still learning.
That's right.
Eric Johnson is still learning. Anybody that says they're not still learning is a liar.
Yeah, it never stops. It's just, for me, the pinnacle is when you get to a place where when you play and you record yourself playing, you're not embarrassed anymore. That was the big thing for me. And my embarrassment level is different than maybe the audience's, right? But when I could listen to myself and go, yeah, that's okay. That was a big place in my life because all of a sudden it began to sound more authentic. Where
right.
Before I was always just terrified. I was terrified that it wasn't good enough, and I was terrified that I wasn't good enough, and my playing wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big thing for me.
You know, a big thing for me learning was the concept of learning of simply that you can't get better if you keep doing the same things over and over again.
Yeah, that's right.
Like if you're stuck in a rut right now, guys, and you're just playing like the same pentatonic patterns, you're playing the same licks, you're playing the same songs, you're playing the samey, seamy, swami, and you look back across the past 12 months and you say, hey, am I a significantly better guitar player than I was 12 months ago? And if the answer, I mean, it's okay, whatever the answer is. If the answer is no, not really, I'm not really that much better, then that's fine. Just be honest with yourself. And then ask yourself, why? And I'll bet if you're serious, you do some thinking about it, it's probably because you're kind of in the safe zone. We all get in our safe zones, right? And we're afraid to try something new.
Yeah.
Because change is scary. No matter what kind of change.
That's right.
So if you're sitting here and you're listening to Steve play and you're like, oh, that's nice for him, but I could never do that. That's not true. That's not a true statement. What you really need to say is, wow, that sounded really cool. And I wonder if I could take like 10% of what Steve taught in this webinar and apply it to my playing today.
Yep.
Or if I could take that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, he's absolutely right. You may play completely different than I play, but that doesn't mean that there aren't creative outlets for you that can change the way that you're doing things. Because he's absolutely right. That's what keeps this whole thing moving forward is you got to stay creative. You got to find new things. I always warn people about noodling. Noodling is different than practicing. Noodling has its purpose and it's important, but there are lots of players out there that all they do all day long is noodle. Well, there are most certainly benefits to it, but there's also benefits to learning something and reinforcing it and memorizing it and then practicing it. So when you do go back to noodling again, your noodling is different. So it's just something to think about a little bit.
And you know, guys, it just occurred to me when I was listening to Steve, you know, there's a lot, and probably everybody on this webinar can appreciate this. There's a big difference between people who can play and people who can teach. Some people can teach and can't really play. Some people can play but cannot teach. It's pretty rare to find the combo. And I think one of the reasons that Steve is certainly, you know, one of the most, if not the most, world sought after guitar instructors because he can play and he can teach. And I don't know if you guys know this about him, but he actually has a bachelor's degree in music education. So he understands the concept of being able to actually teach another human being and the proper way to do that. And every one of his courses, whether you have a lot of Steve's courses or you have none of them, every course is he sits down and he creates this big mind map of everything he's going to teach. He structures it and he creates this procedure of how to lay out all these concepts for you so that they build one on another. This is completely different than watching a random video on YouTube. Now, we got hundreds, maybe up to thousands of videos now on YouTube. Go to YouTube, watch all Steve's videos. That's great. Go ahead and do that. But these courses that he creates are structured in a way that take you from point A to point Z in a very refined way so that you can easily follow along and you won't get lost and you won't get discouraged and you won't get confused.
And my other big thing is, I've my job has never been to try and convince you to play like me or to like the things I like, or, you know, it isn't about that. It doesn't matter whether you play like me or don't play like me, or you like rock or you like blues or you like country or you like metal. The goal is being able to take the concepts and morph them into what works best in your environment. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of times people forget that, you know, it isn't about trying to emulate something that somebody else is doing. It's like, again, this goes back to licks. When I was learning how to play licks, I would learn licks, but I never saw the bigger picture of like being able to take a step back and kind of view something and then be able to go, okay, well, how do I want to approach this situation versus I don't have a situation. All I have are five licks that I can play. That's all I have. Next time on the Steve Stein Guitar Podcast. So let me show you this. So if I move into that second position, now watch this. If I slide again, notice how instead of going to my pinky right here, I'm going to my third finger, and I slide up. Now I'm in my third position. And I'm doing those same notes. So I can sequence from here.
So cool.
Yeah. Hey, Steve Stein here from GuitarZoom.com, and thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, can I ask you a favor? Please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with a friend. Your feedback means more to me than you'll ever know. And be sure to check out my YouTube channels, where you'll find over 1,000 videos to help you with your guitar playing. Thanks again for listening. Stay positive, keep playing, and keep having fun.
If you'd like some help with your guitar playing, but you're not sure how to get started, go to GuitarZoom.com and look for the Help Me Choose survey. By answering a few simple questions, you'll get Steve's personal recommendation of the perfect course for you. All this and more is available for you at GuitarZoom.com.